September 5th. The question is, do you ever get to the place where you don't become a child when you're hanging out with your family of origin? I'm 64 years old, nearly 65, and my sister is 66. My mother is 89, and my father is 90. We are all of us senior citizens and grandparents and great-grandparents in my parents' case, and yet we slip into our old roles as soon as we're all in the same room together. My mother calling me Mary Ann when she gets irritated with me, my sister rolling her eyes every chance she gets, and my dad slipping me a 10 and saying, "Go get yourself some McDonald's," like he did whenever my mom and I got in a fight back in my teenage years. That's actually where my dad seems to be living, circa 1975. It's not hard to do, really. You can watch all of 1975's popular shows on the streaming channels, MASH, The Waltons, All in the Family. Jimmy Carter, who was running for president against Gerald Ford in 1975, is still alive and pops up in the news every once in a while, mostly for being still alive. But yes, the thing that seems most 1975-ish about my dad is that he treats me and Janet like we're still teenagers. I vacillate between being irritated by this and slightly charmed. Like most women I know, I feel much younger than I am, or look, although not as young as 15. 15. A sophomore in high school. Last night, after I got home from dinner with Mom and Dad at the Breezeway's dining room, I dug out my 1975-76 high school yearbook, The Howler. Why The Howler? I have no idea. Maybe because every photograph is howlingly bad. Those were the pre-digital days, back when you had student photographers for the yearbook and newspaper who developed their own film in the school's darkroom. All the yearbook photos, except for the individual student portraits done by a so-called professional photographer, were either overexposed or underexposed. 90% of the candid photos were of the popular kids. Would you like to know their names? I can name them. "I still can't believe that you're dating the homecoming king," I said to Sheila at our sleepover last Friday. "We were art room kids, theater kids. We hung out in the smoking lounge at lunchtime, for Pete's sake." Can you believe there was a smoking lounge inside the school? We were sleeping in the twin beds in Kate's room while my parents slept in the master bedroom. Sheila had brought over some Pond's cold cream, which we'd spread over our cheeks, chins, and foreheads, just for old time's sake.
"I still miss smoking sometimes, don't you?" Sheila asked. "It's been over 40 years since I quit, but every once in a while, I think a cigarette would be so nice."
"I'm impressed that you didn't start smoking again after Kevin left, or any time during Emily's teenage years."
"Oh, I was tempted," Sheila admitted. "But then I remembered how hard it was to quit. It took me, what, 5 tries before I finally did it? And I still wanted to smoke for at least a year after I finally did. They say nicotine is more addictive than heroin, and I for one believe it. Not that I ever tried heroin."
Sheila had come over after work late Friday afternoon. I think my parents were more excited to see her than they were to see me. Sheila was always really good with parents. It might have been because her own parents were so difficult that everyone else's seemed easy to her, or that her parents were so lacking in affection that Sheila was desperate to find it elsewhere. Sheila's mom was one of those women who should have been running a corporation or an army. Instead, she was a homemaker, as most middle-class women of her generation were. And she was good at it, too. She was an excellent cook and seamstress. Sheila and her sisters were always beautifully dressed. And she was a quilter and a needlepointer, a gardener, highly efficient and organized. But not the warmest, fuzziest mom you ever met. Which is why Sheila and I mostly hung out at my house. Hanging out at Sheila's house was too stressful. My mother cared about keeping a nice home, but she also liked to sew and read and spend time with her friends. Her best friend was Jeannie Schmidt, who lived in the house across the street from us. I can still see them now, standing in the middle of the road in their sweaters and slacks, drinking tabs and smoking Virginia Slims, and talking. Sheila and I would be up in my bedroom, drinking Cokes and eating Fritos, or, if we were on diets, drinking Fresca and eating carrot sticks, doing homework, listening to the radio, WMFS, it's music to your ears, and calling in requests. Could you please play Run, Joey, Run? I just have to hear Nights on Broadway by the Bee Gees right this very second. Every once in a while, one of us would look out the window and report to the other, "They're still talking." Of course, so were we, but somehow it seemed more remarkable that these two middle-aged women had been gabbing away for hours than a couple of teens. Jeannie Schmidt stayed my mom's best friend until she died 15 years ago, ovarian cancer. And I'm not sure my mother has ever recovered from it. That's when she and Dad sold the house and moved to Phoenix to take up golf. Anyway, Friday night, I cooked dinner while Sheila entertained my parents with stories about thimble pleasures. My dad was particularly interested because his father had worked in one of the other mill buildings on George Road. He was a foreman for Purefoy Industries, Dad told us. He talked a lot about that quilting business. I don't remember what it was called. Milton Falls Quilting? I was in the middle of plating dinner, but I turned and said, it was the Milton Falls Quilting Company. Why was Grandpop interested in it? Well, it was owned and run by a woman, for one thing, my dad said. This was in the 1930s or 40s, when women by and large didn't own their own companies. But my father's mother, my grandmother Mary, had been quite the entrepreneur. After my grandfather died, she took over the family bakery and eventually expanded it to 3 stores. This was in Columbus in the early 1900s. My father had a lot of respect for businesswomen, and he thought the woman who owned the quilting company was sharp as a tack. Her name was Florence Grangerfield, I told him. We're about to open a quilting museum in her home. That seemed like more information than my dad could process. Ah, that's nice, honey. Your mom and I really enjoyed our last visit to the Heard Museum. Phoenix has so many wonderful museums. You really should come visit us sometime. I had a lot of conversations like this with my dad over the weekend. The good news is that he knew who I was, even if he sometimes saw me as a much younger version of myself. He was very comfortable talking about the past in general, but less good at making segues into the present. If he didn't have sufficient context for what you were saying, he got lost. My mom is much sharper, in more ways than one. I don't think she's happy to be back in Milton Falls. When I suggested that we take a drive on Sunday afternoon, maybe go look at the old neighborhood, she had zero interest. Janet sent me a photo of the old house a couple of years ago, and the yard is such a mess. Someone tore out my roses. Remember my rose bed? Well, it's gone now. It's been 16 years, Mom, I pointed out. irritated for some reason, probably because it was my mother speaking. There are going to be some changes, I suppose, but I don't have to go look at them. Dad might enjoy it, I said. You might think about what he'd like to do. There she was, 15-year-old Marnie in action, sticking up for my dad, mostly because he let my mom run all over him. Oh, it's fine, Marnie, he said, letting my mom have her way, same as always. I don't need to see the old house to remember it. But you might like, I began, before Sheila cut me off.
I should give you a tour of Thimble Pleasures tomorrow. You'll love it, Mrs. C. You've made a quilt or two, haven't you?
Oh, it's been years, Sheila. My mom smiled. But I do love looking at the fabric, and I'm so proud of you for starting your own shop.
I couldn't have done it without Marnie's help, Sheila declared, winking at me. Now, Mrs. C., help me remember that dessert you used to make. The one with pineapple in it. It was always my favorite.
That was the role Sheila played all weekend. She was like a cruise director or the captain of a ship that was always in danger of veering off course. Interestingly, almost by accident, we did end up driving through the old neighborhood. We'd gone to the mall to pick up a few things that Mom and Dad needed for their new place, and on our way home, Jessica texted to see if we wanted to come by and say hello to the baby, who Mom and Dad hadn't met yet. The best way from the mall to Sam and Jessica's was through Milton Fall Heights, which is to say, the old neighborhood.
There it is! There's the house!
Dad exclaimed as we drove down Garmin Street. But Mom wasn't paying attention. She was looking across the road at Jeannie Schmidt's old house, the one where her best friend had lived until she died.
Those were good years, she whispered,
and if I had to guess, she was whispering to Jeannie. I smiled at her in the rearview mirror. They really were, Mom, I told her. They were the best. September 23rd. We did it. We survived the fall quilt show. And not only that diary, but my quilt, Wagon Wheel, won second place in the large quilt category. I've never, ever won a ribbon for my quilting before. In fact, I've lived a life mostly devoid of ribbons and trophies, if you don't count the blue ribbon I won in sixth grade for the poster I entered into the Celebrate Ohio Dairy Farms contest. I'm pretty sure I was the only one who entered. You know what was really nice? How many people came over to congratulate me. I mean, people really made a fuss over me and my quilt. Not just peacemakers, but my friends from the Sew Sisters and one older woman who sought me out to let me know it was her favorite quilt in the show. Oh, and some of the modern quilters congratulated me as well. You ought to enter it into QuiltCon, in the modern traditional category, Carol Wolseley told me, and I warmed to the compliment, though I cooled again when she said, "It probably won't get in, but why not enter anyway?" Well, you know what? I just might. I'm always amazed how everyone in the guild comes together when it's showtime. People you'd never expect to see. The quiet ones, the ones who only show up to a few meetings a year, the ones who never once show a quilt at show and tell, the young moms and the great grandmothers. They're there on the Wednesday and Thursday before the show opens, putting up quilt stands and setting up vendors' tables. The show committee and the guild board decide where the quilts will be hung, but everybody does the hanging. It's cute, really, all of us running around in our little white gloves. There were some mishaps, sure, and to no one's surprise, Marianne Knight got drunk on power and spent most of her welcoming speech tooting her own horn. But the fact is, she did a great job of putting a show together. And, believe it or not, she actually praised my quilt. Not to my face. But, she told Sheila, it was one of her favorites in the show.
"Why don't you tell Marnie that?"
Sheila asked her.
"I don't want it to go to her head,"
was Marianne's reply. You know, I've never given much thought to the fact that Marianne and I have the same first name. Maybe it's because I've always gone by Marnie, or maybe it's because we have such different personalities. Or at least I feel like we do. "We do, don't we?" I asked Sheila as we toured the Down on the Farm exhibit, which was very cute with the quilt stands positioned around bales of hay. Marianne and I have different personalities, right?" Sheila just laughed.
"You two are chalk and cheese. There's simply no comparison. I mean, you're both strong women, it's true, and you both speak your minds, though Marianne's mind is ruder than yours. Louder, too. I don't know, though. I think underneath her brash personality is a shy little girl."
"Marianne's never been shy for a minute in her life," I protested. "At least not since I've known her."
"She was very reserved when she and Pete first moved here, remember? When was that? 20 years ago? You could hardly get her to open her mouth at guild meetings, but she did make pretty quilts."
I vaguely remember this, although I wouldn't have if Sheila hadn't reminded me. "Maybe she was just pretending to be shy back then," I suggested. "Because she's anything but shy now."
"Maybe she got caught up with the wrong crowd," Sheila said. "Anyway, I think it's nice that she told me she liked your quilt. It's a good quilt, Marn. A real beauty."
You know what? That compliment from Sheila meant more to me than any other. Just because we're best friends doesn't mean she praises everything I do. In fact, it's quite the opposite. She is the one person in the world who will tell me if my dress is unflattering, if my lipstick makes my skin look sallow, or if my quilt doesn't have enough contrasting colors. If Sheila says my quilt is a beauty, then diary, it's a beauty. Maybe from now on, all of my quilts will be beautiful, prize-winning quilts. Maybe I will enter Wagon Wheel into QuiltCon and Quilt National. And, dare I say it, Houston. But maybe before I do all of that, I should cut out the fabric for Daryl's Christmas quilt. That project has gotten lost in the shuffle, but I still have 3 months until Christmas, which is plenty of time. More time than I need. Why, I could have that quilt done by next week. All I've got to do is get started. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.